This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Good evening. Welcome to KKFI's Radioactive Weekly Program. The topic of our show this evening is fair trade. This week, over 100,000 events are scheduled throughout Europe and North America to celebrate the World Fair Trade Day. I'm Corliss Jacobs, and here with me to talk about fair trade and the fair trade movement in the Kansas City metro area are Marcia Brox, Kendra Frank, and Linda Zemke, all associated with 10,000 Villages in Overland Park, which is a fair trade nonprofit store. Welcome to the program, ladies.
Thank you.
I think that many people understand that fair trade has something to do with fair treatment of producers and fair pricing of products in the global marketplace, but I'm sure there's much more to it than that. Kendra, as manager of 10,000 Villages Overland Park, I know that you're an expert on this topic. So could you explain what it actually takes for a product or process to be labeled fair trade?
Sure. Well, you mentioned fair pricing of products, and that sure is an important part of fair trade. A fair price is paid to the farmer or artisan who produced an item, and it's a price that ensures that their cost of raw materials is covered, that their labor is covered, that anyone involved in the production of that product has been fairly compensated in the local context for those products. We also really focus on long-term relationships within the fair trade movement, ensuring that those farmers and artisans have a dependable source of income year after year and have the opportunity to earn that income so that they can plan for their future. Also, an important principle of fair trade is ensuring that no child labor is used in the production of the products. Environmental stewardship is also another important part of the movement. You'll see a lot of fair trade products that are made out of recycled materials, or a lot of the fair trade food products are organic, so that's something that's important to the movement as well. And business development is also important. You know, allowing those farmer cooperatives and artisan groups to expand their businesses, to provide them with business support, provide them with financing if necessary to help them improve their businesses. So those are just some of the principles that are very important to fair trade. So if customers are looking to purchase a fair trade product, they would want to look for a label on fair trade food products that would tell them they're fair trade. If they're looking at maybe clothing or home decor or something of that nature, they can, you know, ensure that the organization they're purchasing it from is a member of the WFTO, the World Fair Trade Organization, or the Fair Trade Federation. And they might be able to look at a tag and see the logo of one of those organizations, but otherwise just check on, you know, the organization that you're purchasing it from and ensure that they're members of one of those organizations. And that means that those organizations have pledged to uphold those standards that I talked about earlier.
Well, that sounds like the fair trade process and certification really puts into practice values that many people hold. There might be some questions still, like what difference does it make?
When I was in Pakistan, I went over there to learn about how the artisans make the beautiful Persian rugs that we sell in October every year. And I found that the villages that had rug producers in the villages were much more up to date. They had sewage systems in their villages. They had very nice schools. They had people working together, Christians and Muslims together, building mosques and building churches for their villages. Men are usually the workers. The only thing available in the villages for work is either making bricks or working in the fields. When the rainy season comes, you can't do either one of those. So this making rugs for these artisans allows them to make products inside their homes. They actually set up these huge looms inside their homes. The women can also make the rugs, so it allows them at the same time the ability to make a product, which is really, really important in that area of the world because there are not many places where women can work unless you go to the cities.
So this allows women and families to stay in their home or in their villages.
Absolutely.
And still make a a good living.
Right, and they can still raise their families, and at the same time they can work.
Well, that sounds really good. I think as a consumer, it's difficult sometimes to understand these things and to feel confident that paying just a little extra for a product with a fair trade label is really making a difference. You have witnessed that, Linda. But especially in today's intensely competitive marketplace, price seems to be really important, and people want to know if they're going to pay extra. Does it make a difference? I know all of you have had personal interactions with producers and artisans in other countries who make or grow products that are sold in 10,000 villages stores, which, of course, are fair trade. Would each of you be willing to share at least one story that about fair trade in addition to our Pakistan story?
Yes, I would be happy to share my very powerful experiences that occurred in Nicaragua. I visited Nicaragua in 2012 as part of a Witness for Peace delegation in which we were learning about the consequences of conventional and alternative trade practices in that country. And after that delegation, I visited some artisans who are part of Oyanka Artisiani, a fair trade cooperative which provides opportunities for artisans. This organization was founded by a woman, Tamara Pereira, in 2001, and 10,000 Villages has been buying from her and from this organization since 2008. The first couple that Tamara took me to visit was a couple who made ocarinas, which is a traditional flute from Nicaragua. And this illustrates an important point, because a fair trade principle is to preserve cultural heritage. So he was producing a traditional product. The first thing that the couple mentioned was that working with 10,000 Villages had allowed them to get out of debt. And that was such an important point. One of 10,000 Villages' business practices is that they pay the artisan 50% when the order is placed, and 50% of the agreed-upon price when the order is shipped. And this permits artisans to purchase supplies without going to a high-interest moneylender. This man and wife also had evidence of capacity building. We saw a shelf with examples of the designs that they were able to produce, and Tomas pointed out to us and showed us some prototypes of new designs that he was working on. So he has a lot of input into the kind of products that he is making. They have plans for the future. He and his wife wanted to buy a new kiln, for example, and expand their business. The second artisan was a woman who made ceramic bowls and vases, again using traditional Nicaraguan design. She also mentioned that same thing, that work with 10,000 Villages and its payment practice had allowed her to get out of debt. The woman and her employees were making ceramic bowls, and then those finished bowls were sent to a group of women in northern Nicaragua to make and attach a dried and bound pine needle rim. So Tamara was helping them design a product that would benefit two artisan groups, the groups that made the ceramics and the group that made the rims. I think my experiences in Nicaragua made what I have learned as a volunteer at 10,000 Villages seem real. I could see how their lives were affected by being part of a fair trade organization.
Well, I had an experience when I was in the Dominican Republic in 2012. I went with a delegation there to visit cacao, coffee, and banana farms there. And as far as fair trade certification for coffee, one of the fair trade criteria is that for every 100-pound bag of coffee the cooperative sells, they receive $20 back in a fair trade premium. So that's on top of the fair price that they've already been paid for the coffee. And as per the fair trade standards, they use 15 of those dollars for community development and 5 of those dollars for quality improvement. So we were visiting a coffee cooperative called Fedicaris, and we were going to one of the regional meetings of that cooperative. So there were representatives there of different farms in the area. And when we walked in to the meeting, it was one of those aha moments that I had with fair trade, where, you know, we saw this group of representatives, and they were there discussing and democratically voting on what they were going to do with their fair trade premium money. They were talking about that $15 and how were they going to spend that? Were they maybe going to fund a well project? Were they going to fund a clinic or a school or something else to better their community? And so they were there actually discussing that. The quality of money that I discussed earlier, that $5. So what they've decided to do with that is they've been having issues with the yield of their coffee plants because of the age of their coffee plants. And so they decided to use some of that funding to start a nursery of baby coffee plants that they would then be able to distribute to the farmers in the cooperative to help them improve their yield of their coffee. So, you know, actually seeing that they were there having these discussions and thinking about what they were going to do with that money to impact their community was something that really struck me.
That's amazing. And when I was in Laos in 2010, we were hosted by a lady named Komali Chomthavong. She is considered to be one of the fair trade pioneers in that country. She has started several businesses and several cooperatives of people who make handicrafts, but who also weave silk scarves. And these scarves are absolutely beautiful. We went to many of the villages where these people have looms in their homes, and you could see the difference that it makes on the women's faces. They are so proud to show you the scarves that they make because they are so very beautiful. And it's amazing how much difference it makes that they can work again, just like in Pakistan, with their children there, and they can continue to work and still watch their kids, and that makes a huge difference.
That reminds me of a third artisan that I visited when I was in Nicaragua, and it picks up on this idea of pride and their children. This man and his family and his employees were producing wooden bowls, and the bowls are made from Brazilian cherry. And so that is a sustainable product grown on renewable plantations, another fair trade principle. And the founder of the workshop was interested in showing us his bowls, but he was more interested in introducing us to his grandchildren, two little girls and a little boy. And he wanted us to watch those children perform some traditional Nicaraguan dances. So the little girls put on their traditional dresses, and he provided music via a tape player, and we watched these children dance, and it was an incredibly fun experience. I don't think this would have been possible had this man been living at a subsistence level. So his fair trade relationship had allowed him to pursue this other interest in his life, which was the Nicaraguan dances.
As well as hire employees, it sounds like. So what I'm hearing is that fair trade involves a lot more than just paying producers a fair price as determined by the local economy. It seems that fair trade is a broad business and community development model that truly helps people help themselves and promotes sustainable development and sustainable environmental situations. Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You're listening to Radioactive, a weekly show on KKFI 90.1 FM Community Radio. And I'm Corliss Jacobs, talking with Marcia Brocks, Kendra Frink, and Linda Zemke. Our topic is fair trade. Now, all of you are either volunteers or employees at 10,000 Villages in Overland Park, which is a fair trade store. However, I know that 10,000 Villages is a much larger organization than just one local shop. What would you like for our listeners to know about the organization?
Well, we actually started back in 1946, and I think the amazing thing about our organization is that we were really started by just one woman. Her name was Edna Ruth Beiler. At the time, she lived in Puerto Rico with her husband. And what she saw there was that there were a lot of women producing beautiful crafts, in particular some hand-embroidered handkerchiefs. And she saw that they just did not have a market to be able to sell their product. So what she did was buy up a whole lot of these handkerchiefs, bring them back to the United States. She started selling them out of the trunk of her car. She started selling them to women at her church, whoever she could find. And that is how we were born, just the work of one woman and what she saw and the need that she saw of those women who are producing these products. Since that time, we've grown into an organization that has about 80 stores all over the United States. There's also a 10,000 Villages Canada, and there's about 20 stores in Canada. So we've grown from those humble beginnings of just Edna Ruth and have grown to the organization that we are today, one of the oldest and largest fair trade organizations in the world.
Well, it does sound as if 10,000 Villages has grown exponentially. And now we have the store in Overland Park that I know has been here for a while. Does it have its own special history?
We do have a special history. In about 1995 or 96, one of our volunteers, and she was on the first board of directors, Diane Kuhn, saw an article in Sojourners magazine and said something about you can help people by selling self-help crafts. 10,000 Villages was actually called Self-Help Crafts before 1996. And so she called them and asked if she could get a few products so that she could sell them. And they told her yes, and so she got them, and she started selling them out of her garage. She got other people to form a board of directors and talk to 10,000 Villages U.S. and got the ball rolling so that we could open our own store. In June of 2000, we opened our first store, and it was in downtown Overland Park, right down the street from where we are right now. It was a small location, so we didn't have a lot of room, but it was great for starting. And I had just moved out here and was one of the first volunteers to open the first shipment that we got from 10,000 Villages, and it was so much fun. Oh, my gosh. All these great products and, like, carved giraffes and just amazing things. So I started volunteering right at the very beginning. In 2003, we moved to this location, and I became the manager. And in 2010, I decided not to work anymore, and so Kendra took over. But our store has a lot of volunteers that have been here since we opened the store. And that 14 years is a long time for volunteers to stick around in any one place. If you've ever worked with volunteers, I mean, people usually get tired of what they're doing, but we never seem to get tired of what we're doing here.
I think it's all those beautiful crafts that you enjoy opening the boxes.
It makes a huge difference, yes.
Yeah. And I think a strong commitment to the cause, that's what I feel from people when I come into this store,
yes.
That people here really believe in fair trade and what they're doing. Another thing that I have noticed about your store is, even though it's a fabulous retail store, it also seems to have projects or outreach that takes it beyond the front door.
10,000 Villages over in Park works very hard at educational outreach. We do off-site sales in which we take products to churches or businesses and sell products to people. And we have a speakers bureau. And we, again, will make presentations at the request of a church or a civics group, or often a women's organization, about fair trade and about our products. Recently, we have been making a special effort to reach young people. And we do that through school presentations, which is one obvious way. And we are instituting an ambassador program in which high school students can earn community service credit for organizations like National Honor Society by devising a project in which they reach others and tell them about fair trade. One last outreach project that we have is that we're in the third year of our July Teacher Appreciation Day. And in addition to drawings and telling teachers about fair trade, we provide them with a list of websites that will in turn provide them with some curriculum if they would want to introduce fair trade and alternative trade into their social studies or their economics classes.
So there's a lot of education going on out of the front doors,
right,
of the store. And by the way, we are doing this interview in the very store, which is in downtown Overland Park. And I also think that I am aware of another organization about fair trade in Overland Park, and there may be some connection. Is it called Fair Trade Overland Park? Is that exactly the title?
Yes. So Fair Trade Overland Park is our campaign to make Overland Park a fair trade town. And we're part of a large organization, Fair Trade Towns USA. And the goal of that organization is to work with towns all across the United States to meet certain criteria and then become established a fair trade town. And those criteria are forming a steering committee. So we've done that with Fairtrade Overland Park and have representation from different community organizations, different businesses, and community members in Overland Park. The second criteria is having a certain number of retail establishments that sell at least two fair trade products. The third is engaging community organizations, for instance, churches or businesses who want to use fair trade products or sell fair trade products within their organization. Then the fourth criteria is generating support from the media. And the fifth criteria is passing a city resolution. So once all those criteria are met, then Fairtrade Towns USA would declare Overland Park a fair trade town. And we're on our way to meeting those criteria and hope that they might be met by the end of the year.
Well, that sounds like a really good idea. And now, is this just for towns or is it for other organizations as well to get a fair trade designation?
So Fair Trade Towns has actually broadened their horizons to fair trade campaigns. So universities can become a fair trade university. Congregations, other schools from middle schools all the way up to high schools can be declared a fair trade school. So they have broadened that to include more organizations.
Now, I know that this is a little bit different, but one thing that I have noticed recently is that big box stores and big retailers seem to be carrying some fair trade products. Is this a good thing? Is this connected to something like Fair Trade Overland Park? What do you think is the trend here?
I think what we're seeing is that a lot of consumers want to know where their products are coming from. They want to know what's in their products. They want to know how the people who produce their products were being treated and know that people are being treated ethically in that process. And so it's created a demand for these fair trade products, which is why you will see them in a lot more locations than you did probably 10, maybe even 5 years ago. And so, you know, you'll find fair trade products at a lot of grocery stores and major retail stores. And it's because of that increased demand, because people are asking questions and they care where their products are coming from.
This movement that you're speaking of with fair trade sounds a little bit like the local food movement to me. I know they're completely different, but yet it's that whole thing about wanting to know who produces, wanting that person to be treated fairly and compensated fairly, and then for your own sake, having a connection with the beginnings of your food or your product.
And can they sustain the environment?
Yes, and that too. I think there is I see a larger concern on that. So, with that in mind, other than patronizing 10,000 villages or buying other fair trade products elsewhere, do you have any suggestions for activists or consumers?
I think one thing a consumer could do is to let retailers know that they want a fair trade option. And this can be done in unexpected places. When you go to the florist, you might ask if they have fair trade flowers. When you go to the liquor store, you might say you are interested in fair trade wine. Both KU and K-State have a fair trade option for collegiate wear. So if you are associated with a university, you might present that idea, that you would like to see some fair trade t-shirts for fans to buy. So I think it's letting retailers know that you are interested in that option is very important.
And another thing to do is, I tend to believe wrongly, I think, that almost everybody knows a little bit about fair trade. And that's really not true. A lot of times when people come in the store, you ask them if they heard about fair trade, and they say no. And it's just kind of shocking. It's not a movement that everybody knows about. When you give a fair trade gift, even if you buy it from another place, tell the recipient of the gift that this is a fair trade product and explain what that means. We have cards that we can give the consumers that tell a little bit about the artisan or the group. All places don't do that, but it's important that you tell your friends that you have purchased a fair trade product for them, I think, to get the word continue to move.
And also, you're welcome to get involved in the Fair Trade Overland Park campaign that I mentioned earlier. Even if you don't live in Overland Park, that's okay, you know, because our ultimate goal is that we'd like to see all of the municipalities in the Kansas City metro area involved in a Fair Trade Town campaign or other Fair Trade campaigns, universities, schools, whatever it might be. So, you know, come join us. Come get involved in Fair Trade Overland Park.
We could be Fair Trade Kansas City.
That sounds like a great idea.
I think so.
Good goal. And one thing that we haven't talked about, I'll just mention it again, at the beginning of our show, I did say that this is World Fair Trade Week, I guess. Actually, Fair Trade Day was last Saturday. And it seems as if there are thousands of events worldwide happening throughout the month of May. Is there any way that people can find out about some of these events?
A lot of those events are posted on the website of Fair Trade Resource Network, which is a great fair trade organization that publicizes a lot of educational information about fair trade and also events.
Well, I think we're out of time. This has been a great conversation, and I must say that I have learned a great deal. I thought I knew about fair trade, and I found out so many things I didn't know. Thank you for such an informative discussion, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
This is Radioactive, KKFI 90.1 Community Radio, and I'm Corliss Jacobs. You've been listening to Marcia Brox, Kendra Frink, and Linda Zemke talk about Fair Trade, 10,000 Villages, and Fair Trade Overland Park. Thanks for listening.
Dark money snakes through labyrinths of political action committees and super PACs before bubbling up in torrents of political advertising. Where does the money come from originally? We might eventually find out when taxes are filed months after this fall's election is over. In many cases, we'll never know. But the people spending all those millions in creating and targeting those ads know just about everything they want to know about how you and your fellow citizens use the Internet in your daily lives, and much more besides. Even before the Mad Men of the 60s, advertisers have aimed their pitches at target audiences, but now they can aim at a target audience of one at a time. Many of the websites you visit send out one or more cookies, little data scripts, that attach themselves to your Internet browser and then relay information back about everything you click on subsequently. Advertisers can now micro-target you based on your unique browsing history. You might visit the same website as another person and see different ads, different search results, even different web content than others will see. And coming soon, you'll be the target of a steady stream of political ads on the Internet tailored just for you. Because data brokers have detailed information on 150 million Internet-using voters, and 6 months out from November, the two major parties already have more than $500 million to spend, and super PACs have hundreds of millions more. Unfortunately, there are no cookies attached to dark money contributions. Instead, donations made by corporations and the wealthy are usually never publicly disclosed. As an example, of the top 35 donations made to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in 2012, only one donor was not anonymous, Dow Chemical, which gave $3.9 million. And they weren't the biggest. From there, those many millions flow down the rabbit hole to numerous political nonprofits with names like Americans for American Freedom. Then these groups transfer much of these funds to other 501c4s who gain tax-free status because they are, quote-unquote, educating Americans. This education takes the form of political advertisements. But the $30 million spent online in 2008 that became $300 million in 2012 will likely increase another tenfold into the billions this fall as more and more people use the Internet more often. And as this steady stream of ads more precisely targets the American voter, those funding the torrents retreat further into the shadows from whence they pull their strings.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activities in our community. If you would like more information, would like to comment, or if you or your organization would like to be interviewed or have ideas for content portions of future broadcasts,
call Dan Connolly at 816-217-5875. And you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And that was a rebroadcast of a Radioactive Magazine episode from back on May 13th with Corliss Jacobs and a discussion of free trade and Mike Dean of Move to Amend with a commentary.